Yeah, I love these guys. I love these guys.
John Harbaugh, after the game on Sunday night, when asked if he wants to run it back, and he said, yeah, I love these guys. Well, here we are. It's Tuesday. We're still awaiting the Ravens to announce an end-of-season press conference of some sort. We've heard nothing from inside the building. So as we sit right now, you expecting Eric and John to be back? Do you expect any coordinators here, gone? What are you thinking as we sit here on Tuesday?
Well, there's certainly going to be changes. We've yet to be given any directives from the team about when they're going to make anybody available to speak about this mess. So that's a pretty clear, obvious indication that they're still sorting through this mess. And conversations ebb and flow. And John Harbaugh's been through a lot of teardowns of his staff and rebuilds of his staff, and some have gone better than others. But it's been a constant. And that's coaching, and I get that. We have a lot of people in the personnel department who've been here forever and have gotten promotion after promotion after promotion. And the hierarchy and inner workings and mechanisms over there, nobody ever messes with, tinkers with. There's not a whole lot of questions asked. So at a certain point, a coach may be kind of done. Hey, I'm always firing coaches. What's going on down the hall? How are they getting better down there? And if you think we're better off without both these coordinators, then maybe be better off without me too, because maybe I'm kind of sick of rebuilding my staffs here. So those are things that, you know, there's agents involved, there's lawyers that are involved, and maybe it all becomes relatively hunky-dory and they're hiring a whole bunch of coaches under John Harbaugh in the next couple of weeks. I don't think it's out of the question that they're both gone. I have long maintained that they should go together, and I think you can look at a body of work, signings, draft picks, trades that were made, trades that could have been made that weren't made, the overarching principles of roster construction, and say, yeah, this GM just doesn't get it. And the old way, the Ozzie Newsome way, all that needs to go. You need to start and reboot with people who, you know, don't have legacies here and don't have previous careers here where they were underlings or whatever. We shall see. There's obviously going to be a shakeup of some significant degree. Do I think it involves the two most prominent people in their football administration? I certainly think it could involve at least one of them. But again, it's very hard to have a read when the one guy who's going to be deciding all this isn't really a member of this community, doesn't really want to have anything to do with his fan base, has been completely detached from this area for, in terms of any sort of outward accountability, for the better part of a decade now. So that makes it difficult, because, you know, when a billionaire who bought in for $700 million, who's going to sell it for $6 billion, who thinks it's okay to threaten people about lease deals and make ultimatums, you know, through a select group of media who he allowed talk to him once in the course of 8 years, when that's what you're dealing with, it's hard to know, because he hasn't felt he needs to give anybody any direction about what he thinks of his franchise for basically 8 years. I mean, he hasn't had a proper question and answer session since 2018. I don't believe he's ever answered questions from anybody other than the four people he invited to a suite in Florida once and Marlon Humphrey on his podcast. I don't believe he's ever answered any questions about Lamar Jackson, the entirety of Lamar Jackson's tenure in Baltimore. It's kind of staggering. I mean, I remember, you know, when Peter Angelos, who maybe was already of declining mental faculties, would be just ripped to shreds over not answering questions, never being available. We're talking about the end of the 2018 season, the last time this guy felt like he needed to let you know where anyone stood with him. So that certainly clouds and complicates things.
Sure, and we'll get more into that in a second. But what we do know about Steve Bisciotti throughout his time here, and they've sort of modeled the Steelers, and they love continuity. Both of these organizations hate change. They hate it. But
except the Steelers have changed their spots in the last 2 years.
Correct, but I'm saying a head coach has been there and hasn't won a playoff game in 10 years. That doesn't happen in sports. But at some point, change needs to happen, whether that's with the head coach, whether it's with the GM, personnel department, all of that, because this past year was unacceptable. And if you're looking at just the coaching, home record, Worst in franchise history. Six losses. The blowouts at home in prime time. The Patriot game debacle with Derrick Henry standing on the sidelines for the last 13 minutes of that football game. The Bills game where he had the opportunity to go for it on a fourth and short and you opted to punt it to Josh Allen, who ended up getting a game-winning score on that drive. And then personnel-wise, talking about Eric DaCosta, the O-line sucked. The D-line sucked. Mm-hmm. We knew that going into the year. You didn't take any meaningful swings with decent money or trading premium draft picks. The acquisitions that you did make were failures for the most part. Jaire Alexander was a whiff. Cooper Rush was a whiff. Emory Jones in the third round, and he very well could go on and have a great career. But for
hey, John
a team,
Jenkins, like Raven for life.
For a team that was Super Bowl or bust, yeah. Regardless of what John Harbaugh said prior to the season, to take a guy with a day two pick, knowing that he was hurt, knowing that he had to undergo surgery, those type of value plays can't keep happening. How you do spend your money, it can't keep happening this way. You were dead last in offensive line spending this year. You were 30th in edge rush spending this year. Seventh in linebacker, seventh in safety, corner high up there. Like there has to be significant recalibration with how this organization operates across the board. But what do I expect? I think the further we get removed from that final game of the season, I think it's more likely that John Harbaugh is going to return. I expect there to be some turnover at the coordinator spots. I never thought that Eric DaCosta would get fired. I expect him to stay. I think that it probably is time to move on from John, but I expect him to probably remain.
Yeah, I think fans aren't going to be thrilled by this, but as we sit here right now, I would agree. I think it's an overhaul of the coaching staff with the head coach staying. It is where we sit now. The fact
which
that
would be very in line with an organization that has been all about complacency,
sure,
above all else.
Yeah, I agree.
They want to sell that they're Super Bowl or bust, but they're really, yes, status quo. Run it back. This would be like Mike Brown. I don't have to deal with lawyers and letting people have their contracts, yeah, and trading coaches. I'll just keep paying them. I don't want to pay them to leave. I don't want to start over. I don't want to fly around the country and talk to the best and brightest football minds about maybe actually maximizing what's left of Lamar Jackson's tenure. I'm just going to keep riding with these guys until I eventually sell the team and make $5 billion on it.
So when they sell stability, you say that equals complacency, correct?
It does for me, yeah, because this team has been in – it's not been in gradual decline. You can go back to – the totality of the season that they ended up hosting the AFC Championship game, and they're a shell of what they were then.
It's hard to say that there isn't complacency. If you do run it back with Harbs and you do run it back with Eric DaCosta, this is a generational talent in Lamar Jackson. He won an MVP in his first full year as starting quarterback. They've been the number one seed multiple times. They had a home AFC championship game. That's their only conference championship appearance since Lamar Jackson has been here. At some point, something has to give. Something should give. And if it doesn't, there's an air of complacency.
Look, there was an air of complacency when you went, like, you guys like to, you know, you think I, you know, I'm always tongue-in-cheek or whatever. Sashi Brown runs this franchise. This guy lives on a boat in the Caribbean. When you go from Dick Cass, who commanded respect, who kept people in line, who could be a good cop and a bad cop, who helped Jerry Jones purchase the Dallas Cowboys, who's embedded in league circles and unanimously respected, yes, and for league meeting after league meeting that the guy doesn't want to get off his boat for, he goes and represents the team and represents the team with class and aplomb, and he's got a resume built on his own accomplishments. And then you just give the guy, you gave it to a guy who was 0-16 as a general manager who was running the Washington Mystics. That happened. It happened overnight. It happened with a press release. Not even the billionaire didn't owe you an explanation about that. Not even for us.
He
How about the message to his own employees? Yeah. You took a massive leap. Go trace everything that's happened here since then. They're about to go to war with the quarterback again. They're about to gut their coaching staff again. The roster has been in disrepair because the GM is not very good at his job. And the overarching sentiment is, we know best. Our hubris and our extreme arrogance will eventually trump all. And just keep, we're just going to keep riding our wave. Because you know what Bisciotti truly knows? He don't know where they're going to finish next year. He don't know what the playoffs hold. He don't know what Lamar's next deal is going to be like. But he will put $150 to $200 million in his pocket next year. And the price of this team will only continue to escalate exponentially. That's what he knows. And he said the quiet part out loud. Because he told you back the one time he talked to the Core Four, give me the lease I want or I'm going to sell the team. It's not staying in my family. I want the $600 million. I want to use it how I want to use it. Or I'll sell the team now to somebody else and they can deal with this crap. But I'm going to make $5 billion off my investment.
We have a huge Tuesday show and maybe
$5 billion. Yeah, think about that.
That's a lot of zeros.
You guys know I'd do something for
$10,000. Yeah.
$10,000.
You would jump off a diving board.
Would.
Yeah. Massive show. Hopefully we get some news out of the castle before 6 o'clock today. Guest-wise, Orioles, do they have a big move coming? We'll talk to Andy Koska from the Baltimore Banner, covers the O's at 3 o'clock. And Kyle Goon, columnist from the Banner. It's a Banner day here on Inside Access. He had a piece recently about Steve Bisciotti. He had a piece about Tyler Loop, combining kickers there. So get his thoughts on Ravens and everything surrounding them as the season's over at 4:30.
Yeah, obviously a lot's going on in the NFL right now. We'll touch on a little bit. Yesterday we really didn't get to Cleveland, Cincinnati, all the other things are going on. So we will expand our purview a little bit here today and look at teams that actually are trying to get better and hold people to account. What's going on there? But yeah, I mean, there's still a lot to dissect with the Ravens. We'll talk about the Terps a little bit. They seem to be in real disrepair.
Banner year for local teams.
And yeah, Kyle Goon has been one of the few people around here who has written critically about the job done by the Ravens front office and who does seem to be, I've been talking about Silent Steve forever. He seems to be also wondering when the guy who makes the most money from any pro sports franchise around here, despite only having to put on performances, well, you know, he used to be able to throw playoff games in there, but not so much anymore around here. Yeah, he seems to be pretty interested in hearing from that guy. Who knows if we ever will.
Coming up next. Perfect segue, necessary roughness. It's time to hear from the owner of the Baltimore Ravens, Steve Bisciotti. We'll explain next here on The Fan. There was a time when Steve Bisciotti spoke just about almost every year at the end of the season, the State of the Ravens address. And Steve has said in more recent times that he would inevitably put his foot in his mouth and say something that would get a lot of attention. I remember Cam Under Fire was one.
He openly acknowledged that he thought about firing Harbaugh.
Yes. So those things, those were fun times.
Practice down at the stadium when there's reports about maybe signing Colin Kaepernick. Pray for us while we make this decision.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
So he hasn't talked since when, Jason? 2018, you said?
Yep.
That hiatus needs to end this offseason, does it not?
I mean, it's needed to end for a long time. There's been a lot that's happened with his franchise. And look, this really started with Ray Rice. He got absolutely eviscerated locally, and even more so, I would say, nationally, for their handling of the Ray Rice situation and some of the reporting that came out afterwards. And I think that was sort of the end of the end. But, I mean, someone who owns an NFL team where they only have to put on 10 performances a year and get handout after handout from PSL owners and the average fan and the league itself because it's a socialized monopoly for billionaires and lease deals and stadium upgrades. We had a debacle here with a deviant scumbag kicker who I find it very hard to believe they had no idea about anything with Justin Tucker until the Banner reports it and the disgraceful handling of that situation that led on for months and months and months without boo from him. As we mentioned, a turnover in leadership at the Castle from Dick Cass to Sashi Brown. Nothing from him. I'd say the silence is deafening. And if one wanted to read the silence in as its own level of arrogance, let them eat cake, they're beneath me, I'll just keep taking their money hand over fist, but I owe them nothing in return in terms of direction or accountability or a window into how I'm running this team or where I think this team is or where this team's going. I'll keep raising ticket prices while the product gets crappier and crappier and while we waste year after year of Lamar's career. But I owe no accountability for that as well. It's made me sick for years, and I've been talking about it for years because it's been pathetic and would be beneath an owner who actually really truly was invested in the community and the fan base. And building rec centers and all that's awesome. He could build 50 rec centers if he wanted to. Mm. It wouldn't affect the daily life of him, his earning potential, his spending potential, his liquidity. It wouldn't touch any of it. So I will just say what I've been saying for the better part of 6 years since we've been doing this show. If that's who you are and that's how you conduct yourself, go cash out for your billions and give somebody else a try.
It's beyond time, but it feels even more appropriate right now because I've been saying this for weeks. Whether John Harbaugh stays, he needs to talk and give his explanation as to why. If John Harbaugh is fired, he needs to talk because that's the only head coach that he's ever hired. And also addressing what is the most disappointing season in franchise history, given the expectations that they had entering the year to finish with an 8-9 record, is a failure. It's a failure across the board, and it needs to be addressed. And to not talk the entire time, at least in a public setting, I'm ignoring the core four and the Marlon Humphrey thing, to not talk for the entirety of the Lamar Jackson era is shocking. It's puzzling. It doesn't make any sense. And also, considering the fact that Lamar is due for another contract, yeah, now would be another.
He also doesn't show his face around here. He literally, he shows up at some Maryland games.
He was at the rec center when they did that.
Of course.
And then, of course, he's at the castle, which is not
sometimes,
in public.
Sometimes, yeah. Not all the time.
And then they show him in a suit.
I got news for you. I don't think he was in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Don't think he was in Pittsburgh.
They showed him at the Patriots game, right?
He's at a lot of the home games. And he's a training camp, like the things that you would assume an owner would be at. Yeah.
But he has gone out of his way to have a underground persona. He has gone out of his way to basically conceal what he's thinking, what he's doing, who he is, where he is. He's a recluse in terms of any sort of public accountability, any forward-facing sentiment. I mean, again, even like some owners are on the field before games. Some owners, not everybody wants the glad hand or whatever. Some owners, you know, talk to their fans like, whoa, I know that might be crazy. Like, whoa, I know they're really, really beneath you. They'll never be able to afford to get into the black lung, most of them. I get it. But think about all the people whose seats have been displaced.
Yeah.
For the richest 1%. And what did they get? A call from their sales rep and some BS from this billionaire? Like, they pretend there's some class organization. If you're a Ravens fan, think of all the time, money, and energy you've invested into them. And then I would just sincerely ask, the last 3-4 years, what have you gotten in return?
I think, to be clear, we're not asking him to be Jerry Jones, like when you talk after every game and all that stuff.
Jerry Jones is the general manager. That's a totally different scenario.
But he also enjoys that.
Sure, that GM's not talking after every game.
Yeah. We don't hear from Eric after every game.
I would love to hear from him after that Lions game. Would he take his sunglasses off to answer those questions or just left them on? We'll never know.
Alas, the fan base deserves to hear from Ravens owner Steve Bisciotti, and we'll see in the coming days and weeks if he will do another State of the Ravens. Coming up next here on the program, final time to hear Ravens sound for a long time. So locker room clean out. We have a lot of players to hear from. It's so good we'll get two segments out of it. Let's start with Pat Ricard and Isaiah Likely. What did they have to say yesterday at the Castle? We'll hear from them next here on The Fan.
For sure. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, this is the team that took a chance on me coming out of college. And I tell the Ravens, tell the fans, every time I get a chance to, that I give y'all everything I got because y'all are the ones that took a chance on me when I came out.
That's Isaiah Likely. Locker room cleanout yesterday. He was asked, does he want to stay with the Ravens? It seems pretty clear that the fact of when they gave Mark Andrews an extension, that was likely pun intended, the end of Isaiah Likely here in Baltimore. But once again, in the postseason, Isaiah Likely came up big where Mark Andrews did not.
I mean, there's some organizations that are professionally run and are all business. And then there's others where it's personal. And don't take my word for it. Other front offices and agents who had no dog in the fight were like, who the hell does contracts with a player like that then? Who the hell does it when everybody knows in the league that they're negotiating with a younger guy who's never been paid before and he's the one that they want to keep? And the whole league knows they couldn't get anything for Andrews the previous offseason, which is why they ended up putting their tail between the legs and bringing him back. And now he's worth another $13 million in the future? Boy, it really looks like they're rubbing it in Likely's face. Like, is that really a smart way to run your franchise? Like, what kind of petty little people who are so insecure do things like that? Well, DaCosta does it all the time.
I am interested in hearing Eric DaCosta's rationale for giving Mark Andrews that contract extension, because it wasn't until after the draft last year when he committed and said Mark Andrews is going to be on this football team. It was after the draft. There were multiple press conferences where it was up in the air. Remember, Kenny always joked, it sounded like he was dead.
Yeah, he was talking about him like he was deceased. Yeah.
Like, you know, he's all... And then to change that much, what, 6 months, 8 months later, and in, what, the five games following the contract extension, Andrews had 11 catches for 90 yards.
More from Isaiah Likely, his thoughts on entering free agency.
I really just leave it to my agent. I mean, I feel like everybody says a vanilla answer like that, but, I mean, it's honestly my first time ever not knowing. So just keeping one foot in front of the other. And blessed to be, you know, getting out of the season healthy, being able to just, you know, put everything I do on tape and really just going from there.
It's not all in his control. He got hurt start of the season, probably came back too early. The quarterback gets hurt. What kind of market do you think Isaiah Likely is going to have?
A much more robust market than Mark Andrews.
Yeah. Robust.
He's going to make way more money. He's going to get more guaranteed money. He's going to get more money per year. Smart people in the league pay on upside and potential. People who are worried about covering their ass and looking smart and rubbing people's faces in the mud, well, they play at a little boys club, and you're in the clique or you're not. And, what did they do a year ago? Marlin probably should have been. That was the last best you're going to get with him. No, let's keep him around. Ronnie, man, is he going to be that good again? Well, if he'll come at this price, sure, we'll do the cheap thing. Drafting hurt guys. Rather than getting people who can help you right now because of value. Yeah, there was nothing to keep them from letting Likely hit the open market and giving Andrews nothing and see where this goes. Find out what's available for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Van Noy, run it back with him. Don't try to upgrade there. Okay, I mean, how'd that one work out? Their self-scouting is atrocious. They should know more about their players than anybody else. And the fact that people who they punt on, like Owe, immediately go to the other place and play like an all-pro at their biggest position of need. If that's not an indictment that the emperor has no clothes, I don't know what is. And you can blame coaches all you want. Wait, Chuck Smith, the same guy who Von Miller and all these dudes would spend their own money to go fly and see in the offseason because they thought the best of the best thought he could make them better.
And by the way,
you're telling me he's what was holding Owe back, or maybe it runs a whole lot deeper than that.
And by the way, we gave Chuck Smith his flowers. They were first and second in the league in sacks the first 2 years he was here. So, like, yeah.
They traded him for a safety who can't cover and doesn't tackle that well. In season. Okay.
Very bad tackler. Isaiah Likely, he was asked his thoughts on why the season unfolded the way it did.
I just say, you know, fundamentals. And I feel like, you know, speaking for the offensive-wise, it's just, you know, having drives or have explosive plays where it's, you know, two-play touchdowns or something like that, or it's we'll have one penalty or one lost yards play where it's, you know, a stall drive and it's, you know, having explosive offense as we have. I tell everybody, like, I feel like our offense just scores every time we get the ball.
It did not, though. Even in the ultimate game of the season where they scored early and then they were sort of off the rails a bit until the fourth quarter and then they got hot again.
I mean, I think also I didn't do as much as I would like to. And the fact they lost the game, I'm not going to lie, I probably never will. But it seemed to me, just looking through my notes, like they're in a lot of heavy. Like they weren't putting themselves in personnel groups to try to attack downfield. They wanted to road grade them early. They wanted to try to keep Watting these dudes from rushing the passer because they're getting run over by the 360-pound fullback and the 250-pound running back. Like, the way they were aligning themselves, the way they were sort of assorting their personnel. Like, there's a lot of two-man routes. Like, you're not really going to win. Even Lamar Jackson ain't going to win all that much that way. Now, when they added the specials, oh, I'm going to run to a spot, I'm going to sell play action, I'm going to sell a pitch play to Henry and then take a shot. Or when there's two free runners, I'm going to avoid them both and then throw it 55 yards downfield. Like, okay, but that's not going to manifest itself all the time. Like, they were trying to manage that game a certain way, and it was pretty effective. They're up 10-0, but we all know it's a four-quarter game. And that defense against a quarterback with a pulse, with a brain who can dissect a little bit of whatever, you know, gussying up they do, that dude probably at the end of the day is going to hang 27-30 on you.
Well, I think at times, especially early on in that football game, they were just too predictable. 13 of their first 15 first down plays were runs. If Pittsburgh knows it's coming, everybody in the stadium knows it's coming, you can start to slow down.
And they got them into a bare front, and they're running five out there, and then things opened up.
Yep.
Let's hear from Pat Ricard, who is also a free agent. He was asked if dealing with these crushing losses gets easier over time.
Yeah, I don't think it gets any easier. Kind of just shocks you. It's just that the whole season comes down to one play, and just especially this year, how we started out 1-5, and so many guys dealt with injuries early on in the year, and we were able to put ourselves in the position to make the playoffs of the last game, the last play of the game. It just hurts. I throw for the fans of the city, just the heartaches after just years after years, and it always seems like start the year, we always have a great group that I feel like we underperform just with the talent that we have, and I feel like the fans deserve better. It's just hard to just always just seem like it's just one play that ends up just defining our season. But I mean, it's never just one play. There's 17 games that we felt like we should have won the majority of.
He's been a part of all of this, and he talked about injuries, Jason. He had significant injuries. They thought he would be back soon. He wasn't. He didn't look right. His best game was Green Bay a week ago.
Yeah. I wonder how much that game, you know, took out of him, and maybe even a little bit Derrick Henry. But they needed those 36 carries because the defense couldn't stop a backup quarterback.
But so hearing those comments from McCarr, because he's one of the few players, I guess him, Marlon, Ronnie Stanley, they've experienced all the heartbreak. Ricard's first year was 2017. That was the Tyler Boyd play at the end.
Yep.
The end of Flacco into the beginning of Lamar, all the postseason turmoil there. Ricard's been in all of that.
Speaking of which, let's finish here. Pat Ricard on his belief that John Harbaugh should be the team's head coach.
Super grateful and appreciative of Harbaugh. He's a big reason why I'm here. He's a big reason why I even had a chance to play fullback. You know, I was an undrafted defensive lineman out of Maine, and he could have just looked at me as that, but he saw something in me and gave me the opportunity to make this team. And I just have a lot of respect for him. I think he's a great leader. I think he's a great coach, and I would love to keep playing for him. And I know how much he means to the guys in this locker room and to this organization. And he just loves football. He loves us. So that's all you really want out of a head coach.
Well, that's the most glowing endorsement that we've heard from a player.
Several other guys were given opportunities to throw such verbal bouquets and platitudes or even come anywhere close to that. And they declined in their own way for whatever it's worth. And maybe it's worth nothing. Maybe it's all just us mooks reading into stuff. But yeah, that definitely stands out from most of the clips.
Well, we're going to play those clips during TMI at 3:30. Lamar, Ronnie Stanley, Derrick Henry. All high-paid players, all veterans that have been here, had the opportunity to take up for the head coach like Ricard did and did not.
Coming up next, let's hear more from Locker Room Cleanout. How about Tyler Linderbaum, who, what's his future look like? He spoke. And the newest Raven acquired at the trade deadline, Draymond Jones, always a decent talker. I assume he would have been good at Locker Room Cleanout. So we'll hear from Linderbaum and Draymond Jones next here on The Fan.
Yeah, that's the unique and hard thing about football is you got to be at your best. You got to be at your best. And, you know, obviously the past few years we haven't been able to kind of get over that hump. But the guys in this locker room, coaching staff, you know, we're doing everything possible to, you know, try to get over that hump.
Tyler Linderbaum talking about coming up short again, and he's been a part of a few of these, and I do wonder if he'll be a part of any more of them.
Building a football team with nobody who can rush the passers. I don't know if that's everybody fully committed to trying to win. Look, they're in decline. They're falling down a hill. They plateaued in January 2 years ago, and they've fallen off precipitously since then in every way, shape, or form, except for the individual brilliance of Lamar Jackson last year, who, by having a season that, I don't know, probably top three season in the history of this league, obscured a lot of, covered up a lot of issues. But even then, he can't throw the ball to himself. He can't throw the ball. Like, it's not Bugs Bunny. You know, although if he could, like if that was, okay. That was
hey,
he, I mean,
be cool.
He would have
anyone could do it.
He would have had a better chance of catching that ball than newly paid again Mark Andrews. But
he did have the self pass against Kansas City.
He did.
Yeah, that's true.
And that didn't yeah. work out that great. Yeah. It's not even about getting over a hump anymore. It's about that. Like, have they? I don't know that this is rock bottom. I mean. I was texting with Bobby DePaul a little bit this afternoon. Like, you look at this roster now, you'd ideally have at least one starting caliber corner with size who could play on any team in the league. They don't have one, let alone two, with size. You'd like to have, in this day and age where they spread you out all the time, an elite slot guy. No. You'd like to have one inside pass rusher and one edge pass rusher. If Madubuike's injury is as bad as we think, they have neither. You'd like to have at least one standout tackle. I mean, I think we've seen the best of Ronnie Stanley. I don't think you get through another full season with Ronnie Stanley. And there was a sophomore slump for the right tackle. So that would be a particular concern. And then you'd like to have a modern difference maker in the pass game. And I'm not even going to get caught up in the designation. Either an elite top 10 move tight end or a number one outside wide receiver, size, speed, combo guy who can win individually. They have none of that. They are absolutely putrid and deficient in every one of those categories. They've got a top three quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Hamilton's a nice chess piece. We've seen for 2 years, with all the other deficiencies, that chess piece can barely get you to marginal against bad teams, and it ain't going to do it against good teams. Like, they're in Bleach Creek.
They have serious holes on this roster, and there's so many storylines this whole offseason, but I kind of want to touch on the guy that was just talking, because he's one of them. What they do with Tyler Linderbaum is going to be really fascinating to me, because this is an organization that, prior to selecting him in the first round, has never really prioritized the center position. And then we saw Eric DaCosta back in May decide to not opt into his fifth-year option because it is offensive line, not center, so it was very cost prohibitive. But what happens with him? Because if he walks out the door, then you're going to need another starting
But they also made that decision at a time. They're paying nobody.
Yeah.
They're paying nobody. Like, even Ronnie's a steal. No one's making starting caliber money on their whole offensive line. Okay. Well, and then they made this decision.
Well, I brought it up. They were last in offensive line spending this year. Dead last.
And they got what they paid for. Speaking of the offensive line, Tyler Linderbaum talks about the evolution of the O-line this year.
You know, definitely saw some growth. One of the things that's hard about our position, try to play as consistent as possible for 17 games. Proud how we came to work every single day, try to get better, and that's all you can ask for.
So I'll say this. I'm sure they came to work every single day, and I'm sure they tried to get better, but their guards were awful. They were awful, and they were awful from basically week one to the game Sunday night where their videos out there, Daniel Falele blocking air. Like, that was a consistent.
And the loss of Joe D, I think, really impacted them way more this year than last year. And, you know, the timing of when that mm-hmm. happened, and it's all hands on deck, and everybody's grieving together. But I feel like this year, man, it was – his absence was felt immeasurably. And, again, I wouldn't have paid Patrick McCary $20 million either. He plugged holes at five different spots. I mean, he made them look smarter and better than they were in a bunch of different ways because he literally could play all five spots.
Well, remember, he started that season starting at right tackle, yeah. Then Voorhees got hurt, and then he started at left guard the rest of the way. But
and they drafted a hurt kid to maybe sort of kind of replace him.
Yeah, Emory Jones.
But
yeah.
This year, that entire offensive line that was adequate in 2024, they regressed across the board. Ronnie wasn't as good. The guards both stunk. Linderbaum regressed in part because the guards stunk.
Ronnie's never going to be as good again.
Drop back.
Yeah, there's a lot of wear. There's a lot of miles on those tires, those Ronnie Stanley tires. You want to hear from Draymond Jones? He is a free agent entering the season. They acquired him at the deadline. Beltway Ben, how about cut 16? His view on entering free agency.
Well, like I had before, with open arms, you know, clear mind, clear head. I'm not going to think too much in depth about it until the time, which is probably March. And we'll see what happens from there. I mean, I love being a Raven. And, you know, it'd be great if that continued, but it depends on what they see.
Let's be honest. He's not a guy that's going to be signing the first day of free agency.
No. No. If they want him back, I think they'll be able to bring him back.
I can't imagine you're breaking the bank on Draymond Jones, and he's coming off a year in which he made 1 year, $8.5 million on that contract. So it's probably more in line with that. Draymond Jones is big personality. I think he can factor into a pass rush rotation for sure.
He's a rotational
guy.
But he
is not the guy.
One more from Draymond Jones. Cut 17. He looks back on his brief time with the team.
I couldn't do nothing but just show my appreciation and respect to this program and how they handle everything. Everybody in here kind of, when I first came here, they kind of opened arms with me and brought me in and made me feel like I've been here since July during OTAs. They were drilling onto me and make sure I understood the game plan from day one. Overall, they just taking care of me, and I can do nothing but appreciate that.
So they put all their eggs in trying to maybe marginally improve a horrible defense. Yeah. And Draymond, I bet he got plenty of special attention.
Yeah.
I bet he got extra tutoring. Howie Roseman went out and got Jalen Phillips. These guys got Draymond Jones.
We
really need this one to work, boss.
I like Draymond Jones, but let's not kid ourselves on what Draymond Jones is. And if they want to bring Draymond Jones back, it better be like the third or fourth addition to the defensive line and pass rush. Coming up next, though, we switch to Orioles, and we've talked a lot about how active they've been offseason, but there's a lot of smoke out there in the big city that another move may be coming. What does Andy Koska think? He covers the O's for the Baltimore Banner, and he joins us next.